Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Drew Riley, the founder of Trends.vc. And surprisingly, we're going to talk about product trends. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for SaaS companies. It's perfect for sending smart onboarding campaigns or any other behavior-based communication. We have everything you need to get started quickly and painlessly. Developer-friendly API, campaign templates, and hands-on support from the founders. Try UserList free at userlist.com. Hi, Drew.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, before we touch on the exciting subject, let's talk about another important subject which we cannot skip on. Is you're based in Atlanta, Georgia. It's June 2020, and there's things happening outdoors and in the streets. What's your opinion on that? How can we help? And what's going on?
Atlanta is a complex situation, probably different from a lot of cities around the U.S., where you do have police brutality and racism. But there's also another issue where it feels like Atlanta is a special case where Black officers are also showing unnecessary force against other Black citizens. And we saw a case of that where I think it was six Black APD officers were arrested because they were caught on camera recently. So it's complex.
What is your personal level of participating in this? Like, do you prefer to just do business or do you participate in protests? What do you do?
Yeah, so 2 days ago, I went on the protest that we went along the Beltline in Atlanta, which is like a pedestrian highway. And the protest ended in Piedmont Park with 10 minutes of silence in a circle. And it was sort of a meditation. It got me thinking a lot from first principles about, you know, what's happened has happened. But how do we trace this back and sort of prevent it before it gets started? And that's something that I'm still thinking about.
If you had like a magic wand, what would you do? Like, what can be changed in the system at least?
I would say start with early education opportunities for Black kids. I think that a lot of this has to do with incentives and perception. And do you feel like you're going to be held accountable for your actions? And the answer to that question depends on how you treat people, unfortunately, and that's human nature.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing your opinion. Let's talk business now. And I don't know, one last question on that. Oh, do you have any favorite resources, places to donate or maybe to read up on, which we can send our listeners to?
Sure. I would suggest Color of Change. And it's an organization that I've followed since college. I'm originally from Florida. So when Trayvon Martin was murdered, that situation impacted me sort of to a place where, unfortunately, I'm numb by a lot that's happening right now. But the thing that I love about Color of Change is that they come from a tactical point of view in terms of tying inputs to outputs. And the director gives an example of, you know, maybe they won't approach Mitch McConnell about changing his opinion on affirmative action, because even if he gives his commitment in word, maybe that doesn't transfer to practice. So they looked at much more tactical things that can be done. And again, tying those to actual outputs.
Thanks so much for the recommendation. Now let's talk about you and the trends, which is definitely an exciting topic. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself and your background? And this trends thing, it appeared very fast. Just in the end of last year, we met and there was no sign of trends or whatsoever. Now you're like a trends mogul person online. So how did it all happen too?
Yeah, so my background is as a developer. I did that for 10 plus years, mainly focusing on Ruby and JavaScript, and ended that focusing on Scala and a framework called Spark. I quit my last job in early 2017 and spent a few years doing jiu-jitsu, did a little improv and traveled a bit. And as my runway started to grow thin, I got serious about building again. And that's around the time that we met. I was working on something called SaaS Report, which did competitive intelligence for SaaS marketers. And that wasn't getting any traction. And I started Trends to blow off steam. And that got a response and got a lot of traction. So I eventually shut SaaS Report down and went all in on Trends.
Before we talk about Trends, I have secret knowledge that you had something like a 100 of other projects that you did over your lifetime, like different side projects. So what were those like before you did this one?
It's so funny because before we hopped on this call, I had a few domain expiration alerts about like projects that, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to buy the domain. And I built a few React apps for them and a lot of them never shipped. But yeah, if I was to put a spreadsheet together of, you know, every project that I've worked on for this, it would easily be over 100 projects. I know that one of those domains, well, actually, I remember both of them that were in the expiration notice. One was gooddatascience.com and the other was, I think, NameSandbox. I think NameSandbox would help you find like domain names in Good Data Science. It may have been a newsletter project. I don't really remember.
Is there any overarching topic that's your favorite thing that unites all of those or not?
How about you guess? So it's funny because my personal website has a few of those projects, things that I shipped. And the through line that I notice is that they're all about trends. Like project before was called Dev Trends. And like, if you just look at that, you'll see this reoccurring theme. And I'm reminded of, you know, my friends, like, for example, KP, who I suggested when you asked, like, who else should I talk to? Like, community is a big through line for a lot of his projects. And I feel like a lot of us have these things.
So trends.vc, why did you pick the VC domain? Why do you have such a simple landing page, which only consists of a single opt-in form, like CRO, right? Like, what is the format? How does it exist? What's the monetization plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the domain name and the simple web page, like, both reasons are because of simplicity. I just thought it was a good domain name, easy to say and easy to remember. With the landing page is simple just because it has one job, and that's to get email opt-ins and then build like a long-term relationship with readers and hopefully Trends Pro members. And then the monetization strategy as it stands right now, you can purchase one-off reports. And there's also a subscription option where you'll receive weekly Pro reports, which are an expanded version of regular reports.
What's your long-term goal besides making a living off this giant human treadmill of producing more content?
Yeah, so that's play to me. Like, I can do that until the day I die, but soon I'll add an investing component, and that may come in the form of angel investing. I feel like I'm being paid to research and get these insights now. And I think it's about time to turn some of these predictions into skin in the game.
What is because you come off as a bootstrapper to me, at least, I mean, we all hang out in the bootstrapper community, or am I wrong? But how does it tie together with your desire to be an investor? Like, what's your story there?
Yeah, so I did a report. It was the fifth report on bootstrap funds. And then I recently found out that Userless got into Tiny Seed. So there's this blurring that's happening right now. And before, a few days ago, I fully intended to go into like the private equity route, which sort of resembles bootstrap funds, where I see bootstrap funds as a form of early private equity, where you do have like more linear growth as opposed to exponential growth that VC models require. So I haven't thought deeply about the transition from the intention to go the PE route versus the intention to take the angel route. But if I do end up taking the angel route, you're right, there is some type of divergence from bootstrapper to now you're looking for these exponential curves.
Let's talk about trends themselves. Being an authority in the field, it's of course nice to be an authority, but how do you basically dare or are brave enough to say that your research is authoritative and that you are really providing truthful information about trends, because it's definitely very intangible, vague as it gets, basically. But somehow you manage to do proper research and compile reports. How does that all work?
Yeah, that used to bother me a lot. I'm reminded of something one of my close friends told me, and that's that your taste is all that matters. Because I used to go to like my close friends, I'm in the mastermind called 0 to 1 Makers, and asked them, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And one of them, Edmund, he's actually the host of the Codeless podcast, would always tell me your taste is all that matters. And I think about that pretty much every day. And there's also this element of, I feel like I've covered such a broad range of topics that if we waited for someone to become an expert in every one of these, then like no one would do this. And I think that that actually holds a lot of people back from doing a lot of things that they want to do. And I'm not just leaning on like confidence in myself back to 0 to 1 makers. I'm leaning on a lot of confidence and belief that they instilled in me that they actually like what I'm putting out, and that before it was even a thing that I could do it.
Why do you think knowing trends is important? One occasion comes to mind. There is this book by April Dunford about positioning called Obviously Awesome. And well, she recites the components of the successful positioning. And one of those, I forgot the exact word she uses for it, but something like your positioning's got to be attached to some existing trends, buzzwords, ongoing hot topics, so that the purchase becomes even more desirable. So do you think it's a primary use case for trends, or how those can be useful to your readers?
I think a lot of readers are realizing something that I wanted them to realize in the beginning. And that's that I feel like no matter which report that you read, there's something that will be transferable to your business. I remember having a conversation about a month ago with someone that works in ed tech. And this was before, well, I think this was around the time that I turned on subscriptions. And he purchased one-off reports before, but he said that he would be hesitant to subscribe because he doesn't know which trends are coming next. And then a few weeks later, we talked. And he said that even though he works in ed tech, he went back and revisited the report on cloud kitchens, and he was learning things that could be applied to ed tech from the cloud kitchens report. And that was always my intention. Like what I'm doing here, I see it as thinking laterally. No matter which industry you're in, maybe everything isn't 100% transferable, but you should be able to take one thing from a report and apply that to your business. So even though it's positioned as founders and investors, I feel like a lot of founders should read a report, even if they aren't in that industry. Another quick story is from Indie Hackers. There's a guy he has like an information product where he's selling an Airtable database. And he talked about the report from on micro private equity. And I had a bullet in there for opportunities, which is if you're a micro private equity fund, buy similar assets in terms of customer concentration, and then cross-sell those products to the same customers and lower your customer acquisition costs. And he sort of spoke to that in terms of, instead of building sporadically and having an Airtable database in a completely different vertical, building in the same vertical and then being able to afford spending more on the customer because the return side of that CLV equation has went up now. And instead of, you know, most other people that are selling a similar product, they're selling expecting for a customer to buy one Airtable database, he can expect to sell 1.3 just statistically.
That sounds like a very useful example. Thank you. Share the process with us. So you, how often do you publish? Weekly?
Yeah, each week.
Let's say on Monday, just sit down with a pen and a keyboard.
And a typewriter.
You know, and what do you do? How do you pick the topic? How do you move forward?
Yeah, so I'll start in reverse. So the way I pick the topic these days is that I look at the pro subscribers and I'm just spot checking because I don't know everyone on there, but I know enough of the people and I'm able to like research and look them up. And then these days I think about like what would be useful to them. And what I'm matching that against is a backlog of over 100 trends that I have in an Evernote document. So that's constantly being reshuffled based on what I think will be interesting to them. And then in terms of the process, I rarely start from absolute zero. It comes from this Evernote document that I talked about where I'm constantly appending notes and adding predictions and opportunities. So I will start off pasting that into like a WordPress post. And then the research starts where I'm digging into podcasts, YouTube videos, articles. I'm reading a book right now for an upcoming trend. And I just take in all of the information. A lot of times dots will connect between podcast interview that I heard and then a YouTube video that I watched, and opportunities and predictions and connections just start to emerge from all of these sources. And I'm getting to a point where instead of waiting and doing 100% of the research and then starting to write, to make like the writing better, I will like constantly like just reshuffle the information that I have and work that into a post. And yeah, I'll just revise that, you know, 30 or 40 times to like get a report to like a concise format. And that's what essentially gets shipped.
I'm curious. So you have a backlog of like 100 topics that you could potentially be, you always keep this going. And do you ship in the week of making one? Or do you have like a few already completed ones? For example, I know Paul Jarvis always has a few weeks in advance of blog posts. Like I always have recorded episodes, but I do editing just up to the moment. Yeah. So it's a little like every producer has their own pace. What's yours?
Yeah, that was always the goal from the start. But I'm much like you where I just right now I'm at this pace where I try to make each report as good as possible. So that a lot of times that means pushing it up to the line. But I would like to reach a point where I have like one or two in the can. This is a rare week where I actually do have one that's ready. And I'm thinking about dropping two reports this week instead of one. But that's a separate story of how I even got to that point to have like one ready. But yeah.
Are you not afraid? You know, the goal for us founders is to build a scale, like at least SaaS founders, to build a scalable business that would somehow work without you. I mean, of course, support and everything. But if you need to take a month off in case of emergency, you can do that. Well, you can definitely not ship. What are you going to do? Are you not afraid to live in this constant content battle sort of with yourself?
Yeah, I see scalability as like two parts of like marginal costs, where with SaaS and even with trends or any subscription media, like the marginal cost is pretty low. And then there's this other element of scalability, which is like marginal energy, if you will. And that's where like trends really doesn't stand up next to SaaS. But there's this third element, and it doesn't apply to scalability, but it's like a moat where I feel like brand protects media subscriptions more than SaaS, where you could reach feature parity with a SaaS that's being successful. I did a report on open startups, and you see this a lot where SaaS companies are hesitant to be open because it becomes a race to the bottom once someone reaches feature parity. And with media companies, that's harder. The flip side of that with media companies is because they do have a moat, they can afford to get sloppy with funnels, where people will go through a lot because they know they can only get this perspective from you. Whereas, again, SaaS is much more efficient because they have to be.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting angle. One thing I would really like to compliment what you're doing in general. One of the sort of use cases just occurred to me when I was starting out in this global online ecosystem. It was 8 years ago.
Wow.
I was on maternity leave and I decided now, you know, I know English. I'm a great designer. I've got to make money online. But I had no clue. I was in Russia in the middle of nowhere, knew no one, literally no one. And it was really hard to just make the way, understand how things work and find, because Google search is definitely not an easy way to do that. Find the right people, the connections and everything. And that took years to understand how the world works. So what you're doing is literally explaining how the world works to your readers, which is super precious. Even if they are coming for buzzwords, they could be super helpful for those who are starting out.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Charlie Munger talks about with building like a latticework of knowledge. And that's another thing that was baked in from the beginning was I saw connections being formed where every new report will link to 5, 6, maybe 10 other reports. And I'm doing that a lot now where even the most recent report, I referenced the report before that, or I reference no code a lot. We haven't gotten to like talking about specific trends, but that's one I'm extremely bullish on, almost because every other trend ties into no code in some way.
Let us talk about some specific trends, your favorite ones. We have nice show notes here, so we're going to link to those. Is it okay to link?
Awesome. That sounds great.
Okay. Yeah. So call your top 5 favorite reports. We'll go to link to them and just sort of recap what's going on inside them.
Okay. Yeah. So Startup Studios would probably be my number one favorite because before doing that report, I thought I wanted a startup studio until I realized that to me, at least, it feels like there isn't much opportunity for compounding within that trend, where a lot of the successful products or companies within a startup studio, they get spun out and sold. Like there's almost a trajectory that they follow. Whereas I think that I prefer routes where there's much more compounding. Think Amazon, think what Elon Musk is doing, where he's able to compound knowledge even between companies. But even though that was the outcome, it was still important to know that. And that was probably the most successful report on indie hackers as well. I always have to say online courses along those same lines, maybe number two, because that's when I think a lot of people on Twitter took notice. And that's probably the report. That was the report before I started subscriptions. But online courses may be the most requested pro version. So again, pro versions are expanded reports. And I think that's the one that people have reached out the most asking for a pro version of. I would put micro private equity up there just because that industry is very fascinating and there's not a lot of information on it. So that took a lot of research chops to pull that together. I met a lot of people. One of the most interesting success stories, if you will, for Trends came out of the micro private equity report where Mubs, he's very well known in the maker community and the product hunt community, but he ended up selling one of his projects as a result of the acquirer seeing his project in the micro private equity report. And we never had a conversation, but I found out because in the sale, Mubs linked to Trends in the announcement. So I was simply studying referral traffic and I worked my way back to the post. What else? Paid newsletters. I would have to throw that in there because that's what changed my mind in terms of Trends is a networking tool to this could actually make money because I saw what Ben Thompson was doing. And even before that, to be more specific on the Ben Thompson thing, it was specifically a moment where I think Jason Calacanis was interviewing Chris Best from Substack, and Jason estimated that Ben Thompson was pulling down over $3 million a year. And the goal was to basically use Trends to build relationships. And then to your point earlier, build a separate SaaS to get capital to then invest. And then I realized I could just put 100% into Trends and somehow figure out some way to make money and then reinvest that capital instead. And I would have to say, I think we're on number five, Cloud Kitchens, which is the first one. And like I said, the 0 to 1 makers, my mastermind / maker community, they believed in it before they saw it. But after they saw that report, like they were my number one supporters. And I feel like everyone hopped on board after them.
You know what? I have no clue what a cloud kitchen is, and I am ready to admit that on the mic here. What is it?
So I would describe a cloud kitchen as it's a restaurant, but there's no dine-in option. It's specifically built for deliveries. So with that, you can forget a lot of things like high-priced retail that has, you know, storefront access. It makes a lot of sense to put 10 cloud kitchens, if you will, into one space. You could integrate things like plumbing. You just get like a lot of benefits from pulling these things together. And a lot of times with cloud kitchens, you'll have 10 restaurant concepts running out of the same space without you knowing it. There are 10 different brands on the surface. And when you order from Uber Eats or Grubhub, you see these as separate restaurants. But a lot of times they may be operating out of the same space. And they're much more competitive if you think about like COVID and what happened, where there is no option to dine in. So even if a restaurant is open and they've paid for, you know, dining areas and all of this expensive setup that goes with dining restaurants, they're not set to compete with a cloud kitchen that's purposely built for delivery only. So over time, they just lose out because they're less capital efficient.
Now it makes perfect sense. I honestly thought it was something about technology. And I was like, what? Like, sure,
it does
cloud
sound like
is
that.
A trend. What was a cloud kitchen?
It does sound
you
like
mentioned that.
That
all of many of your reports go back to no code. Do you have a report about no code and give us an overview of this ecosystem because it's so powerful?
Yeah, so no code was the sixth report. And the way I describe no code is you're able to build things without writing code. And even though it's a buzzword and a new trend, as you mentioned, I think it goes back to like WordPress. People forget that WordPress is a no-code tool. People forget that Shopify is a no-code tool. With WordPress, you can build a blog without writing code. Shopify, you build an online store. Even Google Sheets and Excel, where you're effectively automating these functions and you're doing it mathematically, but you're not, you know, writing code. Code is being written, but you're not writing it. And I just see this future where before there were big chunks like forums where you could do this, online stores, blogs. And it's getting to the point where what you can accomplish is getting smaller and smaller where I'm not sure if the metaphor will translate, but there were these big blocks before where this you're being able to no code smaller tasks, which means that you're able to like connect them and link them together. And it's just becoming harder to differentiate between something that was built with code and something built without code, unless you get really, really close. And then you see, okay, these are small blocks linked together. But when you're further away, it's hard to tell these days.
Are there any other topics that you're super excited about that you have not covered yet and that you're looking forward to? Maybe some emerging topics?
So angel investing, I'm not sure if that will be out, but that's one I'm currently working on. Really interested in doing that one. And what I found is that the excitement for doing reports, it actually translates. I was a little nervous about doing this one for the very reason that you mentioned of like, you know, who gave you this authority to like write these things? And I just had to think about what Edmund said there. And also just thinking back to previous reports that made me nervous to put out there. But the things that I've been most excited about, that's also what has resonated the most. Human IPOs, I'm not sure if that will be the title of the report, but something along those lines and to the point of this lattice work forming, I imagine if this comes out of human IPOs, there will be a lot of link backs to a report I did on income share agreements, because there are a lot of similarities between those two. I can keep going. I'm like online giveaways / contests / challenges where people are hacking growth with these contests, and you get these asymmetric returns where you may only be offering like a $100 gift card, but you're getting $200,000 worth of free promotions out of this small reward because you're leveraging like gamification. So yeah, I can just keep going on. There's a lot. And then I have a lot of notes for revisiting reports in the future where I just constantly like tag notes and predictions and opportunities and links that I see on for whenever I revisit previous topics.
It's really inspiring. It seems to be that you don't have any problems with inspiration or topics to cover whatsoever for the foreseeable future.
Almost too much, yeah.
Since we're a design podcast, can you name like what's in your opinion is trending at the moment in the ecosystems of web design / web application design? Maybe some tools that you think are particularly hot.
Two things come to mind, and one is extremely tactical, and it's something that I picked up from the founder of, I think it's TLDR newsletter, but it's about autofocusing cursors. So if you have any opt-in page, it's a pretty like quick hack to just autofocus the cursor that whenever someone visits that page, they're sort of leaning into the experience of giving, you know, an email or a phone number or whatever the call to action is. So that's a quick win. There's also a design game that I tweeted about yesterday. This is called Can't Unsee Dot Space, where it's an interesting game and potential growth tool, which is another topic that I covered, where you basically have two options, binary options, where you pick the quote unquote most correct design, and then you get points for picking the right design. And if you pick it wrong, they'll explain to you like why this design is suboptimal.
That's fun. You're pointing out, I wouldn't call this trend. It's more like hot things that popped up on the arena. That's so interesting. Overall, there is this topic of modern websites. We do have the tools, but it also looks like we all have the same style guidelines, and modern websites just look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Are you by any means excited about giving your opinion on this topic?
I don't know. I think it's interesting. I just think that like design tends to converge over like what's most effective for whatever the KPI is. And then you have to balance that against the fact that when everyone's doing the same thing, you have to almost like, I think of it like creative exhaust, which is a term from advertising where you see the same ads and then you eventually start to ignore them. And I think that as people, everyone converges, it's like on the same hacks and the same design. The opportunity emerges to break away from that just by like being different. No matter what that means, you get attention for being different. So there's like a constant competition between, you know, converging on these effective designs versus breaking out of that to be recognized.
Remember that book, something like Zig When Everyone Zags and things like that?
Exactly.
That's it. And I think one last question for today as we're wrapping up would be, we do live in very weird times in a very weird year, and the COVID crisis followed up by political crisis, like overthrew everything we know about marketing and everything. What do you think is happening or is going to happen to online businesses and online marketers over the next few months in this year?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I think as humans, like we have short memories and we also have long memories. I think that a lot of habits from COVID will stick around even unconsciously. Like if you think you're out in public and someone coughs, you may have an involuntary reaction to that, even though, you know, that was 5 or 10 years ago. And at the same time, living in Atlanta specifically and like looking outside and seeing people walking and running, we just have short memories and we're ready to get back out there and bounce back in some ways. So I think some things we will remember and it will alter behavior, and in some ways it won't.
I definitely recall myself watching movies and everything, and I would be like, this is not safe. This is not safe. How do they even think about hugging?
Same,
you know,
here.
This is
here.
Not safe. But it seems like that's going back very fast, like with the new politics, especially like the various topic is like really fading out fast. I'm really curious where it all goes with time, and I don't know.
Yeah, that sort of ties into something. I know we were supposed to wrap up, but that's why I think trends are trending, because things are moving so fast that people are looking for some sort of curation or signal and all of the noise of like, you know, things are moving fast, but I don't want to miss opportunities. So what, you know, can I pay attention to? And as those speed up, I think that trends as a trend is going to become more important.
I think the curated thing, it's a super important aspect that we all lack, because everybody can get an automated Google search, but we want handpicked content. We want handpicked job boards, freelancers. We want handpicked content, trends like you provide. What are the opportunities in case someone from our audience wants to venture out into starting something which relates to human curation? Because there is giant opportunity for providing quality stuff. What can they do in terms of format?
That's a really good question. I wrote an extremely short blog post on this called Signal to Noise. It's available on my personal website, drewriley.com. And it speaks to signal versus noise. And I define that as meaning, you know, for the amount of calories that I have to expend or energy that I have to put into your creation or whatever you created, how much value am I getting back to from that as a ratio? And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't focusing on. I see a lot of writers who, you know, they take pride in the fact that this is a 10,000 word blog post or essay, and back to a world like full of noise. It's great if you're saying something in all of the every single of those words, and it's like high density, high insight per minute. But in terms of curation, I would think about how do I take the essence of what's going on and boil it down, and I would optimize against brevity instead of being verbose.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. It was super interesting and super unusual. You're definitely the first person that I talk to about trends in general. Where can people find you online? The trends website, your personal website, anything else?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jane. You can find trends at trends.vc, and I'm on Twitter as DRURLY.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
You too. Thanks, Jane.
And here's another product featured in our Help Founders section. Conversion Crimes gives you the opportunity to watch people use your website, software, or app while speaking their thoughts out loud. This user testing tool provides feedback that founders can utilize to make their products easier to use, reduce friction, and increase conversions. Head over to conversioncrimes.com to learn more. If you'd like your product to be featured for free on multiple awesome shows, welcome to apply at helpfounders.com.